Welcome to Mind the Gap, the podcast that bridges the skills divide with insightful conversations featuring industry leaders, experts, and change makers. I'm Jules, part of the Scoop Climate team. Join us as we explore strategies, ideas, and initiatives reshaping industries across utilities, technology, business, education, and more. We'll uncover experiences that drive inclusivity and skills development, discussing topics like workforce development, mentorship, and the power of diverse perspectives. Whether you're a student, professional, or organisation committed to growth, Mind the Gap is your resource for navigating today's challenges. So let's bridge the gap and unlock limitless potential. Stay tuned for more empowering conversations with trailblazers shaping a brighter future. Joining us today is Dan Holland, a seasoned professional with an impressive track record spanning over 25 years in the utilities, FM and defence sectors across the UK. His career has been marked by a relentless pursuit of delivering more for less. In 2019, Dan embarked on a new journey by transitioning to Network Plus, a smaller company based in Manchester. Here, his mission was clear: to build a dynamic team of young, ambitious professionals. The results spoke for themselves. Dan's team swiftly earned a reputation as a dependable, agile, and highly effective service provider. Their success translated into substantial growth, expanding both their client base and the array of services they offer. Beyond his professional endeavours, Dan is a passionate advocate for workplace safety and well-being. He's equally committed to empowering individuals to reach their full potential and advance their careers. Dan's dedication to the industry is further underscored by his role on the EU Skills Board, where he collaborated with members to enhance workforce attraction, development, and retention strategies. In this podcast, we talk about what motivates Dan, what he sees as being pivotal to helping plug the skills gap, and how we can make the biggest change since Victorian times. So prepare for an enlightening conversation as Dan Holland shares his wealth of experience and insights on Mind the Gap. It would be great if you don't mind starting off talking about your career progression in utilities, any milestones that kind of got you to where you are today, and what led you to come into the utilities industry.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I'm pleased to take the opportunity to talk about my career. We'll decide how interesting it is at the end. I joined the industry. I was a comprehensive kid from Stoke with not a lot of prospects, I suppose. Coal mining industry closed and pottery industry closed. Father was a welder, mum was a cook, so I knew of the industry. Left school, went through university ultimately because that's what my parents wanted me to do. I wasn't certain about what I wanted to do or what I could do. Graduated in university, and if the truth be known, in quantity surveying, joined a private quantity surveying practice, which I found very boring, into a construction company, and then the A50 and main dual carriageway was linking the M1 to the M6 in Stoke. And I joined a small telecommunications company that had got a contract on there. So that's how I came to join the industry. In terms of key milestones, there have been so many. It's been a great journey. So fell into the industry, but it's been a great journey. Why has it been a great journey? I've had so much opportunity. The opportunities have been endless for me. And the people have been so kind. Generally, it's seen as a hard-nosed environment. People digging holes, very macho, quite the contrary. There's some great people that, like me, just fell into the industry but have a wealth of experience, but generally put overalls on every day, don't necessarily put a shirt and tie on or a shirt. So there's been so many opportunities, so many great people that have been prepared to impart such great knowledge. And I suppose the infrastructure's aged and needed repairing. So we weren't limited with the amount of opportunities and our ability to grow our career and the career of the team.
So you came in at that point. What's your career look like through utilities? So just thinking about our listeners, and if they're looking at starting a career in utilities, yeah. What's the path been for you?
So I suppose don't think you've got to be an academic, because I'm certainly not. I managed to just scrape through my GCSEs to go and do my A-levels, and just scrape through my A-levels to do my degree. I'm dyslexic, so you can come into this industry with limitations. I've certainly got them in terms of literacy. We need all types and all experience. In terms of the key milestones then that I've been able to achieve, I suppose that most of them through people. The opportunities, I've said, are quite endless. And then so what we've been able to do, we've been able to face into a lot of different problems. The network fails very frequently. it's not the same in one area versus another, the type of apparatus, things like that. So you're constantly facing challenges. I like that. I like the change. Right. I like the dynamic environment, and I love working with people. So I suppose I've had opportunities because there's been contracts that have given me the opportunity through to duration. So if I go through from being a QS, I became a site manager, right, because on the A50, the job I spoke about, I mm-hmm. thought the site manager was pretty weak. So I asked if I could do both. And that was my step into, I suppose, real management rather than an advisory role. I then moved from that, started to climb the ladder in terms of being a manager of a region into a wider region and then joining the board. But the skills were very portable. You just had a bigger team, people with different skills, enhance their capability, encourage them to the best they can be. If there's one key message I give you, is surround yourself with the best possible people.
Right.
And no business has got a monopoly on the best ideas or the best individuals. So when you come across something new, be open-minded, embrace it, and see what you can get out of it. Generally, people want to do a good job. It's how you lead them to be the best they can be.
I love that. And just to get to know you a little bit more, so that's obviously your career, what you've done in the industry. How do you spend time when you're not at work, and how do you address kind of that work-life balance?
I love work. it is difficult. And I love work because the people that I work with.
Yeah.
I love my family. I've been lucky that I've had a wife that's been familiar with the industry majority of my adult career. So let's say she's tolerant.
Yeah.
But I think the words that she would use, she's tolerant to a point. If she allowed me complete freedom, I would be feral. So we've got a situation where she understands the industry, yeah, and the industry has allowed us to bring rewards for our family, mm-hmm, which we enjoy. In terms of recreation, it's changed over time.
Yeah.
Very sporty when I was younger. Try and keep myself fit now, but the bigger part in our life is our children.
Yeah.
They're now virtually adults, so you go through a chapter where you're getting the balance right from going to work and spending quality time with the family. I'd always say I got that right. I think my wife would have to tell you objectively whether I have. So now, boys that are largely independent. So our life looks, we're starting to rebuild our life, I suppose, as a couple. Oh, and nice. We do get the balance right. You know, we're lucky enough to be able to holiday and enjoy those times, but your phone will always go. There'll always be some interaction. Yeah. My wife doesn't mind it, and I enjoy it. You like to be connected with what you do. It's what's developed you today. So in terms of the social pastimes, I love the gym. I love cycling, just generally to try and keep myself fit. In terms of, I enjoy skiing as an individual. So there's seasonal stuff that we can do, and we're very fortunate because I've been in this industry and it's allowed us to enjoy the rewards that generally we're getting enough freedom to be able to enjoy it. And we've got the wherewithal to be able to go and do some things that we particularly enjoy, like skiing. So that's how I do it. Final point is I do a bit of charitable work and I enjoy it. I don't do it because it's the right thing to do. I do it because I want to do it. My kids go to a local grammar school, and the grammar school performs exceptionally well academically. But I see that they don't necessarily get the all-round skills out of the children because the facilities around sports and things like that are not there. So I do some work to raise funds and assist with that. Another one is Toy Appeal, which is a Northwest-based charity which gives back to those families that can't give to the children what I've been able to give through my career to our children. So we donate money and time, both personally and at a business level, which is very fulfilling, probably a lot more fulfilling than the work that we do for our clients. So we're seeing society and the children in society get some benefit, which they should be able to. Every child should be able to enjoy the Christmas.
That's really nice. So I think you've probably touched on this a bit with your talking about your career, but what would you say motivates and inspires you to be the leader that you are?
People have motivated me, and I'll come back to that. I've learnt off so many great people. Some people have learnt what not to do.
Yeah.
And you can't be fearful of recognising that every leader won't be the best leader. They'll have individual skills. But in terms of personal motivation, I love doing a good job. So I like the customer service element, and I love the challenge. So you stick the three together, I'm very lucky to be in this industry that is allowing people to earn very good rewards with the dynamics that come about through network failure and upgrades, and also the interface with people, which is what I really enjoy. People I work with and the customers. So it's changed over my career, but the dynamics, all those three dynamics have always been there to play. I suppose more positively now, as you get towards the end of your career, although you don't often want to recognise it, is how you leave that positive legacy through people.
Yeah.
So I think we're really fortunate in terms of this. We're at an inflection point. And I think what has always stimulated me is getting the best out of people and seeing their careers progress. I can really see an opportunity now through what's happening at this inflection point that we can really do something that hasn't been able to be done since the Victorian era.
do you see yourself maybe going into a bit more of a mentoring role? Or
I'd love to.
Yeah.
I think I've got knowledge to impart. I've got to recognise that there's a generational shift.
Yeah.
And what motivated me might not motivate them. Mm-hmm. But I think there is experience that I've had, largely through failure, that can encourage people to be brave, step out of the comfort zone and be prepared to fail. I think society, through social media and other things, when you have failure, it's so much more public than it was when I was a young man. So we've got to help people to be the best they can be and protect them from the vulnerability when something inevitably will go wrong.
Yeah.
So give them the education and information to be informed in what they do, to not take uncalculated risks, but encourage them to be the best they can be.
So it feels like that leads nicely into the skills gap, because that's mainly what we're here to talk about today. Could you give me a bit of an overview of how the skills gap is affecting the utilities industry at the moment and the key challenges that you're seeing in your business?
So I think at times we over promote this skills gap, that there is a skills gap. And at times there's no doubt, and there has been through my whole career, that if we talk in isolation to utilities first, we're not great at making the sector attractive. So when we do HS2 or a Hinkley Point, everybody in the country knows it's a major construction project. Nobody talks about the infrastructure that's failing every day, that we could have a whole career. And that career could mean, it's partly why I enjoyed utilities opposed to construction, mean I could be home most nights. So the infrastructure around the areas that we live is failing. So we don't need to travel to a Hinkley Point or wherever HS2 is currently being constructed. We can actually work in our own geography. So back onto the skills gap. I think what we've got is people with skills that are very portable. So we used to talk about the fact that we needed engineering skills. We undoubtedly do. Through regulation, which is what controls our whole industry, we have to have great customer service.
Yeah.
So when I joined this industry, if we were looking at an engineer doing asset repair work, as long as he was good at that asset repair work, that's all that mattered. It's now about the customer. So he has to be a good communicator. He has to be very understanding of the communities that he lives in, as well as doing that asset repair. So the point is, half of his job now is about that customer interface. So I think we've got an opportunity to embrace those people who are really good, that care about their local communities and give them the engineering skills. So in terms of more specifically around the gap, it's acute at different times. We need to try and stabilize the networks that we operate on so we don't get that acuteness. So high failures in periods of demand. And not to spend too much time on there. So let's optimize the workforce we've got and make them really effective at what they do. But we have a part to play in that, at us as the contractors, I suppose, so, and our clients, to try and make sure we get continuity of work and we give people the skills. So in terms of, I think the biggest challenge that we face now is, how do we make this industry attractive? We're not a tech business. We're not going to be able to demonstrate something that is really powerful. What you are doing here through this publicising the industry is going to give an awareness as to the industry is far wider and less narrow and has got great career opportunities. You don't have to be a pure academic or have had certain skills to be able to come in. Just embrace the environment you operate in, work hard, and I'm sure your career will flourish. So the final point on the skills gap that I think we need to talk about is that we have the practical things, and I think we've really got to look at that through regulation into our clients' organisations, into the supply chain. If I come back to that at the end, and then the point I'd like to pause on is how we change the society norm in our sector. So if you look at it, we have to say post-pandemic, we've seen a huge shift in how people work and operate. And some of that can be done very effectively remotely. Unfortunately, we can't give a lot of our field force that liberty. So they have to go out there and work. They can't decide they're going to opt to work from home.
Yeah.
And that might be optimizing their output for the day for certain people. So I think what we've really got to recognize within this is how we try and make this industry, I suppose, attractive, but how we try and give people a degree more flexibility than maybe we have done from the 7:30, 8 o'clock start, finish at 5. And I suppose that's what I think we need to think about and think long and hard. I think back to the client, supplier, people piece, what we tend to do is secure work based on price and a level of service. I think some organisations, I'm only going to quote one, Electricity Northwest, are now looking at the price that we pay individuals and the types of individuals that are within our tendered structure in order to encourage us to make sure we're investing in skills for the future. Now, they may be one of many, it's just one that's crossed my mind. So there is definitely a move to allow us as suppliers to invest more heavily and be clinical about what we're doing in order to deliver a service to that client and an enduring legacy that provides better service into their customers. So that dynamic, I think we really need to wrestle with how we make sure sufficient funding flows right the way down, and the funding that we get as suppliers flows down to people who are joining this industry, and we have the right feed for the future.
Are there any initiatives that your business in particular is working on to kind of attract and retain?
Yes. So if I start off with diversity, it won't surprise you to say we're not very diverse, which is really sad. We're moving the dial, but we've come from a very low point. So we're doing quite a lot. We've within Network Plus, we've got women in Network Plus group. It's amazing. Taking us into areas that we didn't talk about freely as a management team. And they are absolutely inspirational. So when I've sat with that group several times, I wanted them to talk about success, and they wouldn't talk about personal success. They were talking about business success. So society norms, so whatever they have done with their family, that isn't successful. Yet, whereas one of these ladies was talking about her personal trauma, how life had been quite cruel to her, and how she showed amazing resilience and brought her children up and then joined our industry because she wanted a career or she wanted purpose. And just trying to get people to use that, you've got the skills,
yeah,
and the determination, use it in our industry because you've got them. It's just bring them to that. So Women in Network Plus is probably the thing I'm most proud of, because I think we can start to move the dial more aggressively, and we're getting a really strong cohort that collaborate very well, and we're seeing how effective that group can be. So that's a real positive thing for me. In terms of, we do the usual things in terms of apprenticeships, graduate programs. I think what we're looking at there is now we're recognizing that the graduate programs are not for all, and apprenticeship level entry is far more. So I'm going to unfortunately go back over time, and the sandwich courses that we used to know when I was graduating, which was that I used to do 2 years in university, a year out, and then a year back in university to enhance your practical skills alongside academic learning. We're looking at every option to do that. So we are really looking at that to try and take people that could go to university, may want to go to university, but how we can give them practical skills when they graduate with their academic qualifications in engineering or anything else. That's a, let's say, a managerial level, an operational level. It's how we really start to drive into these communities. And we're starting to with some customers. So we're doing work with United Utilities. We're doing work with Cadent in communities that we serve. We might have big programs of work, very localized, and trying to get these communities in via schools, community centers, any groups, and looking at people at all ages, those demographics, what would stop you joining this industry, and how can we give you an apprenticeship or an opportunity? So I think that's got the most opportunity to really crystallize into something that's very powerful. And it's not for a Network Plus, because we're doing Women in Network Plus, because we're not where we want to be. This is an industry thing that doesn't stop people doing what we're doing with Women in Network Plus. But I think as industry, we're working in communities every day, and we can tap into some real talent very effectively by not only showing them the theory through what we're doing here with some of the technology you use, and we can show them the practice in the field and get them excited about the opportunity and talk firsthand to people who are doing it in their careers.
So you mentioned, which has been a common theme actually, the more I talk to people, you sort of fell into the industry. You didn't necessarily choose to come into utilities. And do you think that there's been an issue with that kind of marketing of utilities? Because the majority of people that are maybe in the senior roles at the moment didn't actively seek a role in utilities. It sort of fell in their lap and they stayed because of, like you say, the opportunity, the people. Do you think that that's playing a part in why it's maybe not marketed in a way that's drawing in a younger crowd now?
Yeah, I spoke about the pottery industry and the coal mine industry in the area that was brought up in Stoke, and people became, as families institutionalised, they generationally moved into the industry that their parents had because of an opportunity. So mine was very similar. My father was a pipeline welder, so I knew the industry, and you kind of follow what you know. You've graduated in quantity surveying, so the two align. So I think we've a real opportunity to sell into schools, colleges, and communities, as I said, what this industry is about, because everyone who's in a school or college may not be looking for the career. They just want to get out of school. They might not be thinking at that point in time, this is a chapter that they're not enjoying. And I was talking to him the other day, who's joined as an apprentice, who's absolutely flourishing, but he hated school. And there's a whole host of reasons he's dyslexic, but he's now being given it. So we can do the same in the communities where people see we haven't promoted what we do. We've just gone in and done the engineering bit and left, and people don't really understand, unless they've had failure, why it's there. I think the final bit is just capitalise on what's there. I joke with two teenage boys that the worst thing that can happen in our house literally is the broadband go down. So we haven't got connectivity to the outside world. And it's just use some of those things that are very real. Why would you not want a job in this industry where you can liberate people to enjoy what they want to enjoy by making sure you've got resilience in the network, enhancing the network, so you've got speed and efficiency. So there's loads of opportunities. And I think what you're doing with technology is amazing. It is the way that most children learn.
Yeah.
And it's what's going to be their first lens into what we do. They may be fortunate to see us in the highway. They may be unfortunate and not like what they see. But if they can do it through technology, they can explore it further. They can try different dynamics. That isn't for me, but what about this? Without having to physically join an environment or to have parents that are in the industry to educate them, that it wouldn't be a bad place for you, son, daughter, to join.
What do you envisage the future of the utilities industry to look like, particularly in the UK, and particularly with a lens on bridging that skills gap and retaining those people that we want to bring in?
So I think it will be a very UK lens, our business UK lens. So I'll be narrow maybe against some of the other people that you asked the question. That if we go back over time, I don't think we've had the same opportunity to do something in our industry since Victorian times. So the Victorians installed amazing infrastructure that we enjoy today. We're now at this energy inflection point and more dependent on technology than we've ever been. So the infrastructure is old, it's failing, and it needs to change. We can't rely on the same sources that we have in the past to power our homes. The other point that will help with the skills gap, I think, is that my children think about carbonisation in a different way that I do. I want to make sure my children, hopefully grandchildren and so on, can live in the world in a similar way to what I have. And unfortunately, we only need to look over the last couple of months to see how climate change, even those cynics, is real and it is happening. So the point being is the combination of being able to put new infrastructure in, like we've not been able to since the Victorian era, with the transition of energy and decarbonisation, means that there's guaranteed jobs with opportunity for people to quench their thirst around doing something for the world in which we live. And I think it is incredibly exciting about where we'll end up. So in terms of that skills deficit, what would worry me is we've got an aging population, let's call it 50 plus, that have got a lot of skills. So we've got to act and act quickly, because that aging population we see, again, politically, we've seen through the pandemic, a lot of over 55s or over 50s not returning to work. So we've already got an acuteness now because they haven't come back. And then we're going to compound that as these people who are now working retire. So it's how we impart the skills alongside the education around the network's going to change. So I think that anything we can do to encourage people to look at the industry and then to give them an appreciation through technology, as we've said, as to what it could look like, and then start to play with the dynamics that really appeal to them. It might be decarbonisation. It might be the engineering challenges around network configuration after decarbonisation. But it's just, it's so positively enhancing at this point in time through those dynamics, aging network, infrastructure that won't work in the future, and decarbonisation alongside technology that we all depend upon. So a great career for people to capitalise on and do some amazing things.
I always joke that it's the recession-proof industry. Like, having a job in utilities, you're not going to be out of a job, are
you? Yeah, and I think it's a very, very powerful point. I think we've got a generation of people now, we've not had unemployment. And some of the problems that we face now is we're not seeing the level of unemployment. I don't want to see the level of unemployment. If you listen to the economists, part of the problem is we haven't seen unemployment. The point for me being is exactly that, and I often say it to people, you can build a career with certainty. The contracts that we've got, fortunately for our clients, are on average 5 years duration. And if we were unsuccessful the next time around, another supplier picks up that work, it doesn't stop. It's not HS2, it's not Hinkley Point, so you're absolutely right. It's a recession-proof industry, and I think as people become more alive to normal economic cycles and unemployment is going to become more attractive. It's a very valid point.
Okay, so final question, which is the one that we're going to finish on with all of our guests. What advice would you give your younger self if they were starting out in the industry?
Oh, wow. A big question. I suppose, I think several things. Listen to everything you're told, because there's some incredibly talented people in our sector. probably with different skills. Some of them engineering, some of them managerial, to be very blunt. But they've all had experience, and that experience and wisdom you can use to your advantage. Be brave. Took me a while to be braver. I was a QS, I was a site manager, and I saw my level as being at a certain level. Maybe that's history, family, whatever else. But you see some inspirational leaders that are sub 30. Inspirational. Don't see many in our industry because we don't give people the opportunity. So if anyone who's joined, be brave. Be prepared to work hard, but get the balance right. Get the balance right. Society and the products of society now want things different to what I wanted 30 years ago when I joined this industry. So be prepared to work hard because it will be a key ingredient, but get the balance right because you've got the opportunity. Technology liberates what you do, so use it to your advantage. The final point is probably the most powerful point. Enjoy every day. Close one day, whatever's happened, learn from it and embrace a new one. Do that largely through people. You'll be really surprised about what you can achieve.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Mind the Gap. We hope you've gained valuable insights and inspiration from our conversation today. If you want to stay connected and continue bridging the skills divide, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favourite platform so you don't miss out on our upcoming episodes where we'll bring you even more thought-provoking discussions with trailblazers who are shaping a brighter future. Remember, whether you're a student, a professional, or an organisation committed to inclusivity and growth, Mind the Gap is here to guide you on your journey. So, until next time, keep your curiosity alive, keep learning, and keep bridging those gaps. Together, we can unlock the limitless potential within each and every one of us. Thank you for listening to Mind the Gap. See you in the next episode.